Shadow Falls Badlands. The story so far. It had been months since someone had used Galen's name, and we go back to the February before Galen's incarceration in Texas, when he was asked by his one-time employer to hand-deliver a small package to Kansas City. Once there, he discovers the address he's been given is that of a bank that is closed until morning. With the itch to have a drink after weeks of sobriety, Galen goes to a nearby bar. After downing several shots of whiskey, he has a pleasant but short visit with a stuttering and dumpy-looking whore named Daisy. And while stumbling back to the boarding house where he's staying, he happens across a lit storefront window painted with the word Fortune. Compelled by something inside of him, Galen finds himself entering this old gypsy woman's parlor, though what he's looking for is incomprehensible at the moment. The gypsy crone asks him for 6 bits and begins reading his tarot. Something, however, in the cards alarms the old crone, and suddenly she pushes Galen out the door, then cryptically tells him, "You watched them all die, and now they're hunting you." Chapter 5. With a crash, wooden beams collapsed all around him as he fought through the smoke to find the door. Hands and flailing fingers grabbed at his sleeve. Coughing voices called to him. To save them, their screams pooled into a sea of sheer noise, enveloping him more with each step. He pushed them aside, those in his path, their plaintive wails ignored, as he made his way to the escape. And for the first time, the door was still open, though clouded in the choking smoke inside the burning church. Stepping in front of his path was a woman, her hair and clothes engulfed in flame, her screaming mouth hanging wide open in anguish. He pushed her aside, and as he looked back at the door, it was now swinging closed, the man behind it grinning in the way only Cyril could. Galen woke in his bunk. The nightmare had come again, that he was sure of, though he could not remember the details. Unable to go back to sleep, he began staring at the wooden ceiling while thinking about what the gypsy had told him. Hogwash, his breath muttered, though he had a hard time convincing the rest of him. And he tried to focus on something else to take his mind off it. He thought of Daisy. He had laid down with other women before, most times for money, and hardly a one was any sight to look at in the daytime. His mind drifted to the $100 whore he'd first seen at the bar. And when it came to tail, he'd seen men throw money like that around. He'd seen prospectors pay an ounce of gold just for the pleasure of having a woman sit next to their stinking selves. Through a window, he could see sunlight coming up over the city. Most of the other beds in the bunkhouse had been empty for hours. He probably missed breakfast sleeping off last night's binge. Suddenly, he was struck with a twinge of panic. Reaching under the bed, he found his coat, his fingers pawing at the pockets until he felt it, the brown paper and twine wrap box the rancher had given him to deliver. It was still there, and given all the detours he'd taken since arriving, Galen considered it a small miracle. He held the box up and inspected it. The last thing he wanted was for it to seem like the packaging had been tampered with. And when he tilted the box to examine the underside, he heard it. Something sliding. A sound from inside, moving from one end of the box to the other. He put the box down on the bed and looked around. Nearby, a dough-faced farm boy slept soundly, sawing heavy wood with each deep breath of slumber. Galen looked down. In the 8 days the box had been in his possession, not once had he ever noticed it making a noise, let alone one that sounded so alive, his mind thought. He sat on the bed for minutes, staring down at the brown paper and twine wrap box, waiting for it to make another sound. Finally, he caught hold of his senses, picked up the box, and stuffed it back into his coat pocket. he made it to the corner of Walnut and Main through the thin blanket of freshly fallen snow. And as he'd guessed, the bank was now open and fairly busy with early morning customers. Galen entered. One teller sat behind a window, loudly counting out coins for an old man.
15? 16? 17?
She said in a clear voice. Across the room, seated behind a large oak desk, was a man with greased side locks that Galen immediately recognized as the person he'd come all this way to see. The man caught Galen staring at him.
"May I help you?" he asked.
He rose from his desk and, to Galen's surprise, kept rising and rising until over 2 yards of him had gotten to his feet. Galen removed the wrapped package from the pocket of his duster and held it out. "Mr. Dunburton?" he asked. "I believe this is for you." The banker stepped quickly to Galen, motioning for him to keep the package out of sight.
"Please, please," he said.
"I don't understand," Galen responded. "My employer, Mr. Harrison, asked me to give this to you."
"And give it to me you shall," Dunburton said in a hushed voice. "But not here."
He guided Galen's hand, holding the box back to the pocket it had come from.
"Tonight, Mr.
Holt. Tom Holt," Galen lied. Dunburton spoke as he led Galen to the front door, all the while looking back at the teller, who was too busy counting coins to even take notice.
"Tonight, Mr. Holt, if you could come by my house and join me for supper, I would be most obliged, and this way we can finish our transaction."
Dunburton gave him the address, 16 White Oak Lane, a large colonial near the waterfront. At 7 o'clock that evening, Galen knocked on the door. Answering was a large Negro woman who Galen guessed was a servant, given the outfit she was clothed in. "Mr. Dunburton invited me for supper," Galen told her. Wordlessly, the black maid led him in and led him through the foyer to the study, where he waited. And along the walls were cases full of books, old tomes that appeared to never leave their shelves. The banker apparently had money. The house was well appointed, in rich dark furniture and fine brocade drapes. And that's when he saw it. In a glass case near the fireplace sat what first appeared to be a brown turnip on a stand, but closer inspection yielded the truth. It was a shrunken head.
"A colleague of mine brought that back from South America," boomed Dunburton. His voice startled Galen, who hadn't even noticed the host's arrival.
Very interesting, said Galen, not quite sure what to make of the fascinating relic.
"Savages, the lot of them," Dunburton said.
He gestured to a chair for Galen to sit.
"I don't believe, sir, I caught your name back at the bank."
"That's because I didn't give it," Galen thought to himself.
"Tom," he then said.
"Tom Holt."
"Have we met before?"
Dunburton cocked his head and inquired.
"You have a certain air about you that seems familiar."
"Don't reckon we have," Galen responded, trying not to break eye contact as to be suspicious.
"Well then, nice to make your acquaintance, Mr. Holt. I am Elias Dunburton of the Virginia Dunburtons."
He offered Galen a drink. "Whiskey," Galen said.
"Bourbon, actually," Dunburton explained, pouring one for himself. "Pure Kentucky bourbon. Have you ever been to our fair city before, Mr. Holt?"
"No, this is my first time, and please, call me Tom." Dunburton sipped his drink, savoring it.
"So, Tom," he said, "did you bring along that package?"
Galen reached into his duster again and pulled out the box, this time once again feeling the unsettling sensation of something sliding across the inside. He held the box out, feeling relief the moment Dunburton took it from his fingers.
"Now let us look inside, shall we?" Dunburton said,
and Galen thought to himself that was the last thing he really wanted. With a sharp knife taken from his desk drawer, Dunburton cut the twine holding the package and eagerly unwrapped the brown paper. Inside was a small box carved from a wood that was nearly all black. Dunburton gasped with delight. He ran his fingers over the engravings on the outside of the box, the detail of which Galen could not make out, because he dared not get any closer than a few feet. Dunburton carried the box to a side table and stood with his back to Galen. With a soft click, Galen heard the ornate wooden box open, a slight squeal to its hinges. Dunburton clasped his hands with delight before closing the box again and stowing it away inside a drawer that he then locked with a small brass key. With a wide grin on his face, he looked up at Galen.
"Now what sayest we have us some supper?"
The dining room held a table big enough for 10, but tonight it only sat 2. Perched at the head was Dunburton, with a seat for Galen just to his right. Galen looked down at the fine tablecloth, the fancy china and silverware, and in his simple clothes he felt like a tumbleweed that had just blown into a church dance. Entering from the kitchen was the same woman who had answered the door. She carried a silver tray, upon which was piled with mutton chops and a bowl of roasted red potatoes. Galen watched as she silently served the food onto their plates, then picked up the tray to go back to the kitchen.
"Leave the tray, Maddie,"
Dunburton told her. Following her orders, she laid the tray down and left.
"Can't let them leave with the food because sometimes they eat it," Dunburton said, cutting into his mutton chop. "Maddie's a fine slave, been with our family all her life. But you still have to keep a tight leash on her. Last week, I caught another one of my slaves trying to teach her how to read."
Galen nodded as he chewed, not because he agreed, but because it was the best meal he'd had in as long as he could remember. With the back of his hand, he wiped the juice from his lips.
"Tell me, Tom, where do you stand on the Negro question?"
"Pardon me?"
"Well, you don't seem to have the kind of accent that leads me to believe you're from these parts. You from back east?"
"No," Galen responded, taking another forkful of food.
"Then where do you stand, Tom?"
"Never thought about it much. Reckon that's because I never had any slaves of my own. Been a poor man all my life. Never owned much more than the clothes on my back."
Dunburton laughed as he wiped the grease from his mouth with a corner of his linen serviette. "I'll tell you this much, Tom. Now that this country has finally fulfilled that American promise called manifest destiny, and that unnecessary, and some would say unjust war we started a few years back in someone else's country is over with, we are coming upon another itch that will have to be scratched. This whole issue of slavery, Tom. And I feel that time will come soon enough. For I am a veteran of 2 wars, the British reincursion of 1812, and this last one in Mexico. Terrible business, both of them. Terrible."
Galen said nothing and kept eating the delicious supper that had been prepared for him. And as Dunburton drank more, he continued waxing politic with his houseguest.
"Tom, we are alive at the most exciting time in history. This is the birth of the modern age. The telegraph, the daguerreotype, we are more advanced than any civilization that ever walked the earth."
Dunburton drained his glass again and stared at Galen.
"Sir, I cannot help but continue to think yours is a familiar face to me. Did you say that you served in the war?" No, answered Galen flatly. That's quite peculiar, the banker continued. For as I live and breathe, there's something about your face that strikes me as one I've seen on the battlefield. Must be this old bourbon and my flagging memory. Galen finished what was on his plate, noticing Dunburton had barely touched his. Finally, the banker called for Maddie to clean up, barking at her harshly when she dropped a fork onto the floor. As she left the room, Dunburton poured himself another drink, his unsteady hand shaking the neck of the bottle against the rim of the tumbler.
You're not Irish, are you, Tom?
Holt doesn't sound Irish.
No, sir.
And Galen realized he had no idea where the kin of someone named Holt would actually hail from.
Well, that's good, Tom, because the Irish are becoming a scourge in nearly every city they infest like bugs. You see, my hatred of the Irish goes back to the war. You ever heard of the San Patricios?
Can't say as I had, Galen lied.
Goddamn cowards, bunch of lily-livered Irish Catholics who defected from the U.S. Army to go fight for Santa Anna. Can you believe that? Joining up with those dirty Mexican bastards to fight their own countrymen.
Galen could feel his toes curl inside his boots as the banker's eyes stayed glued on his.
They even took a bunch of regular boys with them, convinced them our army was made up of devils of some kind, and poisoned their minds with lies and false ideas. But in the end, we hunted down those San Patricios, nearly every last one. And you know what we did to them?
No, Galen answered, gritting his teeth.
We flogged them and branded each one of them with a red hot iron, branded them with the letter D right on their faces, and then hung every last one of them as a group. That's what we do in this country to deserters and cowards.
Dunburton put his glass down on the table with a bang, loud enough that Galen nearly leapt out of his seat. The memories that lay buried, of those skirmishes, of the eyes of those American men he could see across the battlefield through the acrid smoke, surfaced much too easily in his mind, as did the atrocities those uncontrolled soldiers committed in their wake.
You have to forgive me, Tom, for when I imbibe, I often find my emotions getting the best of me, Dunburton said.
He attempted to get up from the chair, but his legs drunkenly buckled. The banker dropped his glass tumbler to the floor, causing it to shatter. And Galen hurried to Dunburton's side. The ruckus roused Maddie, who rushed through the kitchen door to find Galen helping the master of the house back to his feet. The slave eyed Galen suspiciously and came to his aid to help right Dunburton in his chair.
It's okay, Maddie, he told her. I must have had one of my spells again.
Mr. Dunburton, I do appreciate the meal and the hospitality, but being as it's late, I should probably take my leave, Galen said, trying to conceal the desperate itch he was feeling to flee the house.
Tom, I do thank you for bringing me that package. Please tell your employer that his debt to me is now forgiven.
He turned to Maddie.
Please take me up to my bed now.
And Galen thought to himself how that message was never going to be delivered, given his plan of never returning to that ranch.
Good night, Mr. Dunburton, Galen said, watching Maddie lift the banker back to his feet, where his groping hand seemed to make quick work of finding her breasts as she helped him up.
I can find my own way out.
Good night to you, Mr. Holt, he said without even looking back.
It was indeed late, and a cutting February wind blew through the street as Galen trudged back to the boarding house. His task done, he'd get the first coach going west in the morning.
He had no intention of staying in this town, especially given the proximity to Dunburton. The closest reminder he'd had in years to that which he thought he had left behind. As he cut through the empty street, he stepped wide across the curb over the slush and piled dung from passing horses. And that's when he noticed he had again crossed Washington Street and was standing no more than 100 feet from the lit window of the Gypsy Crone's fortune-telling parlor. Again, she was seated there on the ornate rocker, her raven-colored hair shining in the lamplight. Galen thought of what she had said to him the previous night. "And now they're hunting you." Her words echoed in his mind over and over like an endless loop. "And now they're hunting you. And now they're hunting you. And now they're hunting you." And suddenly the voices in his head were replaced by a new one. His own, telling him to go in there and kill that gypsy bitch. Once and for all. And that is Chapter 5 of Shadow Falls Badlands. Has Galen's past caught up with him? And what exactly is he running from? Your questions will be answered over time. If you have something to say, I want to hear it at shadowfalls@podshowla.com. And big thanks, of course, to Black Lab for the song This Night, the Badlands theme song, which you can find at blacklabworld.com. Come back soon for Chapter 6, where I promise you some very big things will be revealed. But until then, this is Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, fading to black.
There are things I have done. There's a place I have gone. There's a beast and I let it run. Now it's running my gift that you send. You send it my way. So take this knife, wrap it around me like a sheet. I know I'm not forgiven, but I need a place to sleep. So take this knife, down on the street. I know I'm not forgiven, but I hope that I'll be given some peace. There's a game that I play. There are rules I had to break. Mistakes that I made, but I made them my way. So take this night.